We begin the current daf, Masechet Eschul and daf Samach. We begin 5 lines down from the top of the Amud, but the Gemara continues with different discussions that was between the Caesar and Reb Shub ben Chananya, which we introduced because there was an incident relating to the Gemara's discussion, which is the topic of our daf in here, regarding the signs of kosher animals, which defined certain animals, and one of them related to the Be'eloi, which is the deer of Be'eloi, and then the line of Be'eloi, which is the first incident the Gemara had mentioned. Then the Gemara continued with different incidents relating to theological and philosophical questions that the Caesar had to Reb Shub ben Chananya. So I'm like Kesel Reb Shub ben Chananya says, Be'ina the itzavis le nahama le'lohechu. I want to prepare a meal for your God. So I'm like loy matzah. He says, you can't. So on that he said back, am I? Why? So on that, Reb Shub ben Chananya says, nefishi chelvase, because his legions, his army, his people are too many. So Amalei said to him, Ivra, no, truth is, I want to do this. So Amalei, so Reb Shub ben Chananya said to him, fine. He says, Puk tzaveis, go out and prepare, legida de Ravisa, by the edge of the river that the name was Ravisa, de Ravicha Alma, where there's a lot of space where all his legions could gather over there. Now his intention was that it should be a place where the wind could have dominance over there, as we're going to see in the incident. Now, Tarach Shita Yarche Kaita, so he toiled the Caesar for 6 months in the summer, Asa Zika, Kanchaliyama, a wind then came and then swept it out to sea. Then Tarach Shita Yarche de Sisva, then he toiled for 6 months in the winter, Asa Mitra Tavi Beyama, then the rain came and then drowned it all into the sea. So Malay, my high, so the sea says, what is this? 6 months I toil, the wind takes it away, 6 months I toil, the rain takes it away. So Amalei, Reb Shub ben Chananya said to him, Hani Kunoshoi, these are his that sweep the house, which is like the wind, like the vacuum that sweeps it up, and Zulichoi, and then there are those who they rest the dust on the ground, which they used to put water so that the dust settles. In other words, and that's the rain, they already ate up all your food. The Asikame, they come in front of the king, first one sweeps, then the other one settles the dust. So Amalei, so on that the Caesar said, if that's the case, that he has so much legions that was eaten up for 12 months worth of food was just his sweeper and his dust settler, then Lemitzina, then you're right, I can't prepare a meal for him. Amalei Baskez, Reb Shub ben Chananya, the daughter of the Caesar said to Reb Shub ben Chananya, Elaheichen Nagarahu, your God is a carpenter. Because the Chesiv is a pasuk in Psalms and tell him, Hamakarva Maim, he roofs with water, Ali Yosef, his upper areas. So you see, he's a roofer, he's a carpenter. So Emile, Dinavid Lechadim Masterisa. So go ahead, tell your God to make for me this Masterisa, which Rashi says is Devalsteig Blaz, which is some type of tool that winds thread. Right? He's a carpenter, he makes these stuff, let him make this for me. So Amalechayay, so he told her, fine. Boy Rachme Allah, he beseeched mercy regarding her. Vinga, and she got Negev Tzara, she got leprosy. So Isva Beshuka de Rome, so they placed her in the marketplace of Rome. The Havala Masterisa, and they gave her this Masterisa, this reel, this thing that winds thread, to have Nehigi, because that was their custom. The Chol Demin Gibberemi, whoever got a Nega in Rome, that Yahavale Masterisa, they would give that person Masterisa, this tool, the Yasa Beshuka, and they would sit in the marketplace, the Susser Davlali, and they would then wind thread, Kechidalechzi Inchi, so that people should see, oh, you never look at this person, Vilabai Rachmel, and beseech mercy for that person. So one day Reb Shub ben Chananya was walking by the marketplace in Rome, and Havas Yosef Vesaster Davalila Beshuka Derem, and she, the daughter of the Caesar, was sitting there and spinning and winding thread there in the marketplace of Rome. So Amalos, he said to her, Shapirta Masterisa Diavloch Elohai, do you like that Masterisa that you wanted from my God that he made for you? Look what you ended up with. You got exactly what you wanted. So Amalisa, she said to him, Eimalei Lelahach Lishkal Maidi Havli, tell your God to take back what he gave me. So Amalai said to her, Elohadi Dain, Mehev Yahav, our God, he gives Mishkalei Shakal. Once he gave the good, he doesn't take it back. Now the Gemara now resumes the discussion from the previous staff before we brought in these incidents, these stories with the Caesar and Reb Shub ben Chananya regarding the signs of the kosher animals. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda, he says, sure, an ox is normally karsasan, it has a wide stomach, or farsasan, it has wide hooves, with the feet, Rav Reshe, a big head, and Rav Gunufse, and a large tail. And the opposite is true by a donkey. Says the Gemara, L'may Nafkimina, what relevancy of halacha does it have? It's L'mekech HaMemker, for business dealings, where if someone's buying an ox, he should check by these signs to make sure it has it, to verify and ascertain that he's actually getting a bona fide ox. Now, another teaching from Amr Rabbi Huda, relating to an ox, Shersh Hikrav Adam Rishon. The ox that the first man, Adam Rishon, sacrifices, the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah of Chesam Aleph that he had reason to bring a sacrifice. Karen Achas Hoysaleh B'Mitzchei. So he had this one horn, this ox usually has two horns, had one horn on its forehead. Shlomo HaMelech says, the Pasuk in Tehillim says that David HaMelech is beseeching V'Teitiv LaHashem, that this should be good for Hashem, Mishur Par, more than the ox, which is the bull, which is referring to the ox that Adam HaRishon had sacrificed, as we're going to shortly clarify, Makrin Mafris, which was horned and hoofed. Now the question is, what do you see from this Pasuk that the ox of Adam HaRishon had one horn? Makrin Tarti Mashmi. To the contrary, Makrin sounds like, if we're saying it's horn, sounds like that it had two horns, because that's normally how oxen are, and it's also saying in the plural. On that, Rav Nachman, he says, no, Mikaren Ksiv. It's written without a yud that could be pronounced Mikaren from the horn, meaning that it had only singular, only one horn, and not two horns. Now, continuing on this idea of Amar Bihuda, Rav Yehuda says, Shur Sheik of Adam Rishon, the ox that Adam Rishon sacrificed, Karnav Koidmus Leprasaisam. Its horns came before its hooves, meaning generally, most oxen, its hooves, the ox is born with. It's born with feet. Its horns grow when it matures at a later point in time. But by the act of creation, the animals were created in their full height, as we're going to shortly quote. So therefore, with its horns already. So when the animals, as they came out of the ground, the head came out first, it comes out that the horns were there before the hooves. Shneim, like it says in the Pasuk, that David HaMelech says, V'titiv LaHashem, that it should be good for Hashem, this prayer that I'm giving, Mishur Par, more than the ox that's the bull, which is Makrin Mafris, which is horned and hoofed. Now, you see from the order of the Pasuk, Makrin Bereshiv HaDemafris, it first mentions that it was horned before it mentions that it was hoofed, because the horns came out in its creation before its hooves. Now, says the Gemara, Masayeli Rishu Ben Levi, this supports Rishu Ben Levi. Because the Amar Rishu Ben Levi says, Kol Maisa Bereshis, all the acts of creation, became Masa Nivru, they were created in their height. So therefore, the horns came before the hooves, because it was created with it in full form. And that came out first, because like we said, when it was coming out of the ground, first the head came out, which is with the horns. Now that's why it's calling it in the Pasuk, Shur Par, which is really two different things, but it's saying on the day that it was a shur, then it was as big as a par, because a shur, when it's one day old, is called a shur. As the Pasuk says in Mirkach HaBeis, shur ki yivalid. When it's born, it's called an ox. A par, a bull, is generally called when it's 3 years old, as the Mishnah says in Masechtas Par. Why are we calling it shur par? Because when it was born as a shur, it was already like a par. It was already full, in its full height, became asa nivru. Additionally, bedaita nivro. They were also created according to their consent, to their will, which is that they were notified they're going to be created, and they desired that. Additionally, mitzvyonim nivro. They were formed in the form that they themselves chose that they should be formed in that form. Shnem, like it says in the Pasuk in Bereshis, v'chula shemayim v'artz v'chol tzvam, that they finished the heaven and the earth and all its hosts, which the Gemara says, al tikri tzvam, don't read it their hosts, rather their desires, which was that they were formed in the desire that they themselves wanted to be formed. Continuing on this theme of creation, says the Gemara, Darshab Chanina Bar Papa. Pasuk in Tehillim says, Yehi Chavayel Hashem Lo'olam, the glory of Hashem, the honor of Hashem should be forever. Yismach Hashem B'masav, Hashem should rejoice in His acts of creation. Says Rab Chanina Bar Papa, Pasuk Zeh Sarah Olam Amr. This Pasuk in Tehillim, the master of the world, referring to the angel that's in charge of the world, he said this pasuk. Why? Because b'shash amar Kadosh Baruch Hu l'mineyu b'ilonis, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said the terminology of his command, that when it was the command of the trees to be created, he said that they should be created l'mineyu, by the trees. When it says eitzah pri l'minay, he said that the fruit trees should be all according to their species. In contrast, as he's going to expound, by zrom, by seeds, by herbs, it didn't say in their command that they should be l'minoi, according to their means. But when they did come out, they actually did come out, as the Pasuk says, Mazriya Zer l'mineu. They ultimately did become out, created, according to their species, and not intermingled. As he expounds as follows. So, Nasu Deshom Kavochema Ba'atzman. So the herbs, they made a Kavochema regarding themselves. Because they said, Imritzah Nishal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Be'ervuvia, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu desired that there should be intermingling of species, so Lama Amal Lemineu Bilonis, and why did he say when he commanded regarding the trees that each of them should come out according to their species, that But if he wants intermingling, why is he telling them that they should all be individual species? But moreover, if regarding trees, it's not normal for them to come out intermingling because they're very big trees and they're very large branches, and it's not appropriate for them to be intermingled, but rather to be spread out. And still, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Lemineyu, still Hashem says that each tree should come out by its own species, distant from its other one, so that it should be recognizable. So onu us, which we're manyfold, and it's normal for herbs and herbage and all these types of things to come out a lot, all intermingled. And actually, if we're not careful that each grass should come out by itself, then actually each one is not recognizable on its own. Allah has come avakama, all the more so that for sure that we have to be careful to make sure that we're limineyu, that we're according to our own species. So miyad kol echad ve'echad yatz limineyu. So immediately each of the deshaim, of the herbs, which weren't even commanded, they came out according to their own species, because they made a kavachim, and that's what Hashem desires. So pasach sara oilam ba'amr, so the master of the world, this angel, said this pasach, yihi chavad Hashem la'ilam, that let the glory of Hashem be forever. Yismach Hashem b'masav, Hashem should rejoice in His creations and His acts, where they're all meticulous to follow the dictates of His desire, which one of the great levels of a mitzvah is, even if a person, it's not even part of the mitzvah, but a person recognizes that that is what Hashem's will is, just like by one's own parent that has a similar concept. That's what the Dasham did, and therefore Yismach Hashem b'masav. Now, relating to this concept about the Dashaim and what this actually unfolded, so by Ravina actually asked a halachic question based on this. Hirkiv shnei Dasham ze al gav zev. Someone grafts two different herbs, one on the other. As we continue to advise, generally grafting is a prohibition of klayim. But L'Rab Chanina Bar Papa, that he just said, that the Dashaim, the herbs, they came out on their own understanding to be in their own species, but they were never commanded. Ma woda alocha be regarding grafting one on the other? What's the question? Kivin le kasa b'hu l'mineh, since the command from Hashem was never that they should be according to their own species, so le mechayv, so there's no liability, because it's not considered grafting two different species, because Hashem never commanded that separation. Maybe because their HaKadosh Baruch Hu, their God, agreed, and obviously He's the one that made the creation, and that what followed through was with His consent. So it is as if it does say that even by herbs that they should be according to their own species, and that would be a problem about grafting. So I think more take a little bit, it's not clear what the halachic conclusion would be regarding this question about grafting different herbs. Now, continuing on the previous theme regarding the acts of creation. So, Reb Shimon ben Pazi Rami, he posed the following contradiction. Ksiv, on the one hand, in Bereishis, it says, that Hashem made the two large luminaries, which sounds like that the two luminaries that of the sun and the moon were both large. On the other hand, Ksiv, the Pasuk says, the large luminary and the small luminary, which we know that the moon has a smaller role than that of the sun. So, but were they both large, or was one smaller, one larger? So on that, he explains, Amr Yerech Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What happened was that they both were created large. But then the moon said in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rebbein Shalom, Master of the World, Efshel L'Shnei Malachim She'ishtam Shu B'Kesser Echad, is it possible for two kings to use one crown? How could we both be two large luminaries? Who's the king? How could you have two kings using one crown? So Amalos, Hashem said to the moon, L'chi, umat, yes, asmich, you're right, you go and you make yourself small so that there will only be one king with the crown, that'll be the sun and not you. So Amalafanav, so the moon said in front of Hashem, Rebbein Shalom, Master of the World, Ha'il v'martla v'necha dava hagen, since I said something appropriate in front of you, Amar es atzmi, I should make myself small? So Amalos, he said to her, to appease her, the moon, L'chi, umashal b'yem b'layla. No, you're right, go ahead, you should rule during the day and during the night time. Which is that the moon sometimes does have a visual even during the daytime, which is not the case with the sun at nighttime. However, Amar Lei, the moon said back to Hashem, "My revuse, what greatness is that? The shrug of Betira, Mayahani, what does it help? A candle during the daytime, doesn't illuminate anything. It's not significant." So Amar Lei, so Hashem said to her, "Zil limni bach Yisrael yom v'sham." Okay, let the Jewish people count their days and years based on you, which the Jewish people follow a lunar, primarily calendar. And that's how we make the new month. However, Amr Leib, but the moon said back to Hashem, but Yemenami, but the sun also It's not just, that's not going to be solely my greatness. Because it's not possible for the Jewish people to count the different kufas, which are the different seasons, which that requires the solar calendar. As the Gemara says, that the way they make a leap year is contingent on regarding the solar calendar. So like the Pasuk says in Bereishis, Vahayu, and they should be, not just one, says the moon, it wasn't just me, it was me and the sun. That's La'isis for signs, Ulumayadim and for the holidays, Uliyam Bishanim and for days and for years. So that's still not, I don't have, it's not a purely lunar calendar that the Jewish people have, it's also solar. So said Hashem, okay, Zilgo, Likri Tzadiki B'Shemecha, let the righteous be called on you. Like, I made you small. Don't worry, that'll be a sign of greatness, like the Jewish great people, Yaakov HaKatan, like a Pasuk in Amos says, Yaakov HaKatan, who we see that Yaakov Avinu was called the small one, Shmuel HaKatan was called Shmuel the small one, David HaKatan, as we have a Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph that says that David was the small one. So don't worry, that'll be a sign of greatness, that the great Jewish leaders will also be called the small one, like you were made small. However, but Hashem saw, in spite of this, that the moon was not appeased. So Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, "Hiviu kapar alai, bring atonement on me, shemi atati esayerech, that I made the moon small." And behind Amar Rishim Lakish, Rishim Lakish says, "Banishdana sir shel Rish Chedesh." What's the difference by the he goat that's brought on the Rish Chedesh by the Musaf? Shnema by Lashem, like it says the pasuk in Midbar Lashem, meaning by all Yom Tovim, which Rosh Chodesh is like a minor holiday, it says Bisor Chatas Echad, and that there is a he-goat of one Chatas, but it doesn't say Lashem. Why by Rosh Chodesh, which is primarily that of the moon, which is when the moon renews itself, which is that's Rosh Chodesh, that it says Lashem? Because Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Kadosh Baruch Hu says Seir Zeh Yehi Kapara Lai, let this he-goat be atonement for me. That's what says Lashem. Why? Because I made the moon small, and that's what Rosh Chodesh celebrates, the renewal of the moon, which is that which waxes and wanes, because it gets small, it gets bigger, but it's smaller than the sun, and therefore that's why it says Lashem over there, so to speak, like Hashem should get atonement for having made the moon small. Now, continuing on this theme about the acts of creation, and specifically regarding the Dasham that we mentioned before, so Rav Asi Rami, he posed a contradiction. On the one hand, Ksib, the Pasuk says, "Vatayitzi ha'aretz dasha," that the earth brought forth its herbs, its herbage. Now, that was B'tlasa B'Shabbata. That was on the third day of the week, which was on Tuesday, which was the creation of the herbs. Now, Uksiv, however, there's a Pasuk that says, "V'chol siyach hasad," and all the herbage of the field, "Terem yibaretz," had yet not come onto the ground. Now, that was Pasuk, is B'mali Shabbat. That was on Friday in Erev Shabbos. So, did the herbs come out on Tuesday? Or even on Friday, was it not out yet? So, now he answers, Malamet Shiyatza Dasham, this comes to teach, that the herbage had come out, but V'amdu al Pesach Karka, was standing there by the opening of the ground, desiring the rain waters, like the Pasuk says in Bereishis Beis, Kilei Himter, because the rain didn't come down until man was created on the sixth day of creation, at Shabbat Adam Rishon, until the first man came, Upik Shaleim Rachamim, and beseeched mercy on them. Then the Yardu Gusham Mitzamcha, then the rain came down and they sprouted. L'lametcha, to come to teach you, Shakadish Bochum, Mesavala, Tvalasan Shal Tzadikim, that Kadish Bochum desires the prayers of the righteous. So, yes, on Tuesday, it was coming out, but it was right there on the edge of the ground, not coming out and sprouting, until Friday, when Adam Rishon Davin, then it finally came out. As the Gemara illustrates this, that Rav Nachman Bar Papa, Havilah, he ginsa, he had a certain garden, and Shadi Bibizran, he planted some seeds and it didn't sprout. Bayirachmi beseeched mercy, and asim mitzvah tzamach. Then the rain came and it sprouted. And Amr, he said, Hainad Ravasi, this was the teaching of Ravasi, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires the praise of the righteous, and therefore that's only when the rain came and sprouted the seeds that he planted. Now, continuing on the halacha of our Mishnah, regarding the signs of kosher behemoth and chayas, so Amr of Chanan bar Rava, he says, regarding a pasuk, and this pasuk is in Devarim, that says as follows, it says, however, these animals you should not eat from those which are malagera, that do chew its cud, umamafrisa parsa, and that have the split hooves. And it says the word hashasua, which generally that's translated as part of mafrisa parsa, meaning it has totally split hooves. And that it's saying, but the gamal, the arnevis, the shafan, although they're malagera, but they don't parsa lafrisa, but they don't have split hooves, tamemim lachem, they're not kosher. However, Rav Chanan bar Rava expounds the word hashasua, which means split. That's why the literal translation is generally translated as connect with mafrisa aparsa. He actually says, "Beri b'fnei atzmei." It's actually was his own creature, which are actually connected to the second half of the pasuk regarding those which are actually not kosher, like the gamal, the camel, the arnevis, and the shafan. Sheyesh l'shnei gabin b'shnei shedrois, which actually had two backs and two spines. And that's actually why it's called shesua, which is like split, like twins, like which are split, which are these two backs and these two spines. And that's what the pasuk is referring to. Now, if that's such a Chan bar Rav, v'chimayish rabbeinu kenigi hayu, was he an animal hunter, a balistri hayu, or was he someone that would shoot an arrow to hunt wild animals? In other words, how is he so proficient with these wild animals that most people are not so proficient that he's mentioning all the types of animals that are kosher and not, and he's able to tell you which are the four, including the shesua, which most people don't know of such an animal? How did Moshe Rabbeinu know this? Was he out hunting in the forest all day that he knew it? On that he says, Mekan tshuva lo'ime in Torah min ha'shamayim. This is a response for those who want to say that Torah is not from heaven, because how did Moshe Rabbeinu know things that even people that know science and know the world as best as possible, they don't know this, obviously because it's coming from heaven, which is from Hashem, who created the world, and that's where Moshe Rabbeinu got his information. Now, Amalei Rav Chisda of Tachlifa Bar Avina, he said, regarding this last Agadah, he says, Zil kasev kenigi ublistri bagadatecha. Meaning this Agadah, this Agadic teaching, has some fine words, which are these kenigi and blistery, so when you write over these Agadic teachings, write these words, but explain what do these words, kenigi and blistery, mean. Because they're fine words, and words are how we live, and the finer the words, the better and the more effective the teaching is, but explain this so people understand the words that you're saying. Now, because he said regarding the words that kasa begadatecha, so therefore the Gemara now brings this next pasuk in Yeshua, that also relates to the same idea where he says, oh, that's a beautiful word, write it down in your Agadic teaching, but then explain it. The pasuk in Yeshua says regarding the lands that, although it's part of Eretz Yisrael, the Jewish people didn't conquer it, which were Chamesha Sarni Pelishtim, from the five princes of the Philistines, which were Ha'azasi, Vahashdudi, Hashkaloni, Hagisi, Vakraini, Vaavim. Now the difficulty with this pasuk is Amar Chamesha, he says that it was only five lands, but V'chashar Shita, but he counts six. So on that, Rabbi Yonasan, he says, Arunki Shelehen, their distinguished ones were Chamisha. It says the princes of the Philistines, five of them they didn't take. Because one of them is actually not a prince of the Philistines, and therefore that wasn't counted as Chamisha Sarni Pelishtim. So although there were six, but only five of the princes of the Philistines. Now, Amalei Rav Chisda of Tachlifa Bar Avina, as in the previous Agadic teaching, says, Kasav Arunki Bagadasecha, write down that word, I like that word, Arunki Shelehen, the distinguished ones amongst them, write down the word Arunki, but appears, but explain it so people know what that word actually means. Now, once we brought in this teaching, this Agadic teaching, the Gemara actually says, Opligi de Rav, which actually disputes Rav, because the Amar Rav, Rav had said a different interpretation, why it says five, although it's six, because he says Avim, which was one of the six that I mentioned, actually Mitaman Bo. They actually came from Taman, which is the son of Eliphaz, the son of Esav, is called the Timni, Eliphaz HaTimni, which they desired the gods of the Philistines, and therefore they left their place to come and dwell amongst the Philistines, and that's why we only count five Sarni Pelishtim, not six, because actually one of them mentioned who were from those that were there in that area were actually not Philistines, they were actually from the descendants of Esav. Tanam Hoch is similar in the Braisa, that Evim, one of the six that were mentioned, were actually mitaymen bo. V'lomen the kreshman even. Why were they called even? So either because she'ivsu es mekaymen, because they destroyed their place that they left, since they left their homeland to come to the Philistines, their original place had been destroyed. Or dava acher, which ivsu is like distorted, like destroyed. Dava acher, another interpretation, even could be read with an aleph. She'ivu le'lohos harba, because they desired many gods, and that's why they came to the Philistines. Or dava acher, even mishishkola royasim, because whoever would see them, Avis would be gripped by this trembling and this terror, and that's why they were called the Avim. Now, Omer B'Yitzav, he says, the reason why they were so, one of the things that they were so scary, the Islu Shitzri Darishini, they had 16 rows of teeth, L'chol Chad V'Chad, for every one of them. And that's a pretty scary thing to look at. Now, relating to the Avim that we just introduced, Amr B'Shem Malakish, he says, Harba Mikrois, there are many psukim, many verses, that appear to those who recite them, Shiru'in Lisarf, as if they should be burned. that they should not have been written, and there's no necessity for them to be written in the Holy Torah, and it's disgraceful to put it together with all the holy verses that we learned out so much Torah and so much knowledge, that these psukim are literally should be burnt. The hein hein gufei Torah, however, says Rish Lakish, but these are the primary texts of the Torah because they have great secrets and understandings that are contingent on them. And he continues with many different ideas to the end of the teachings regarding some of these examples. The Pasuk says in Devarim, and that's why we're continuing with this, regarding V'ha'avim, Hayeshim v'chatzeim ad Aza, that they dwelled in the open cities until Aza, which the Pasuk there concludes and says, and that the Kaftarim, which were a different people, Hayetzim v'kaftar, that came up from Kaftar, Hishmidim, they destroyed these Avim, and v'yeshiv tachtim, the Kaftarim dwelled instead of them. Now, that, my nafka lamina. So that was parts of Eretz Yisrael. What does it make a difference to us if it wasn't their place, but rather some other people, and they made them run away? What's the difference? Why do we have to write that in the Torah? And that, says Rish Lakish, it's actually saying a very big idea, because mid'ash be Avimelech Avram, Avimelech made Avram Avinu swear, as the Torah says in Bereishis. And Tishkerli, Ulanini, Ulanechti, says if you're gonna falsify for me, for my son, and for my grandson, that you're never gonna conquer my lands. Now, problem is, at the time that the Jewish people were coming into Eretz Yisrael, which was rightfully theirs, which the Philistines were on some of that, those generations of the grandsons of Avimelech were not yet passed yet. So Avram and his descendants were still upon an oath not to conquer those lands. So Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, so Leisu Kaftarim, let the Kaftarim come who are not from the Philistines, Lifku Me'avim, take away those lands from the Avim, the Hainu Plishtim, who they were from the Philistines, V'Leisu Yisrael, Lifku Me'Kaftarim, and then let the Jewish people come and take it away from the Kaftarim. Because Rish Lakish held that the Avim were from the Philistines. And rather, the reason why it said only five and not six was for a different reason, because it said that it wasn't Chashev, it wasn't from the princes. But that was important to say this idea, because, or else how could the Jewish people conquer if it's Philistine lands, which they're not allowed to because of the oath of Avram Avinu? That's what has to say it, to say how they were able to get the land by not taking it directly from the Philistines, but rather from those who took it from the Philistines, which that they're allowed to. Now, according to the one who actually says that the Avim were from Taman, so then why is it necessary to say that? They have no problem taking from the Timnis, it was only from the Philistines. No, it was still necessary to say, because they actually were forewarned not to fight with the sons of Esav either. And therefore the Torah says that let the Kaftarim take away from the Avim, and then let the Jewish people come and take away from them. Now Rashi says additionally, there are many other psukim, like in Sefer Devarim, that also are similar ideas to what we're talking about in this example. Like it says, Ubiseir Yashbu HaChorim, it says that in Seir, the Chorim were dwelling. It says regarding the Moyavim and the Amoinim, that it says that Reform Yashbu, that Reform dwelled over there. Now, all of them have a reason why it has to say, because by all those lands that we just mentioned, it says Eretz Reform Techashiv, that they were considered land of the Reform. Now, the reason why this is significant, because it was said to Avram Avinu by the Bris Bein HaMasarim, which was the covenant that he's going to get Eretz Yisrael, Hashem says, Lazarachi Nasati, to your descendants I will give. And the mentions over there, what are the one of the lands that are part of Eretz Yisrael that his descendants are going to get? It says, Ves Rafam, the land of the Rafam, which is the name of a people. Now, when the Jews left Egypt, and they were passing by Har Seir, Mount Seir, and the lands of Ammon and Moav, they were also called Eretz Rafam. And therefore, the Jewish people entertained to say, hey, let us go and conquer these lands. Because they thought these are the lands that were given to Avram Avinu, which is one of the lands was Eretz Rafam. And that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped them and said to them that, no, that most definitely these lands that are called Eretz Rafam is because at one point the Rafam had lived there. But these are not the lands of the Rafam that I gave to Avram Avinu. Rather, I gave them to these, to Esav, which is Seir, and to Ammon and Moav, which come from Light, because I got rid of the Reform, and I gave it to these other descendants of Avram Avinu, in the merit of Avram Avinu. Esav, who comes from Avram, and Light, who is a relative of Avram. Now, when they reached, however, the Chebel Argev, as it says in Devarim Gimel, that's where the Pasuk says, Hahu Yikari Eretz Reform, that's what's called Eretz Reform. What was Hashem saying? That was the Reform that I gave to Avram Avinu. Again, that was the importance of mentioning all these different ideas, so that we know regarding what exactly are the lands that the Jewish people allowed to conquer. It's not just talking about geography or history. It's important for halachic and for agadic understandings in what the Jewish people allowed to conquer and what not. Continues Rish Lakish. Similarly, you have another example. You have another pasuk in Bamidbar that also seems unnecessary. The pasuk says, Ki Cheshbon, the land of Cheshbon, was Ir Sichon, the city of Sichon, Melech Amori, he was the king of Amori. Who nilcham b'melech Moav b'gomer, and he waged war with the first king of Moav, and like the pasuk says over there, b'midbar b'yikaches kol arzim yodei adarnan, and the Sichon took away the whole land of Moav all the way till Arnon. Again, my nafkamina. Why do we need to know this for? Why is this important? Rather, the reason is because as follows: Damlo Kadosh Baruch Hu, because Kadosh Baruch Hu said to the Jewish people in Devarim, Al tatzer es Moav, do not wage war with Moav. Don't bother them. I'm not Kadosh Baruch Hu, so Kadosh Baruch Hu said, but I want the Jewish people to get some of those lands. So he says, Leisi Sichon, Leipik mi Moav. Let Sichon come and take away the land from Moav. Leisi Sof, Leipik mi Sichon. And they're allowed to take away land from Sichon, just not from Moav. Behind Am Rav Papa, and that's what Rav Papa says in Masechet Gittin, Aflam Chesam and Aleph, Amun Moav, the lands of Amun Moav, Tiharoi b'Sichon, they were purified by Sichon, meaning through Sichon, that land was purified for the Jewish people to go ahead and take it. As we find by Moav, the pasuk says in the Midbar of Aleph, Milcham that Sichon waged war with Moav, and also by Ammon, it's explicit by the boundaries of the sons of God from the tribe of God in Sefer Yeshua that says that they had the boundaries of Yazir and all the land of Gilad and half of the land of the Bnei Ammon, and it mentions over there, and it says at the end, which was the leftover of Malchus Sichon. So you see that obviously that Sichon had conquered that land from Ammon, and this will be fine that the king of this of the sons of Ammon said to the messengers of Yiftach from the Jewish people, oh, because the Jewish people took my land from Arnon until Yabuk. So it sounds like it's the lands of Ammon, but the problem is, but they actually conquered those lands from Sichon, like it says in the pasuk, "Beyushas Arzim Arnon Adi Yabuk." Rather, the idea is because yes, they took the lands of Ammon, but from Sichon, who took it from the people of Ammon, but the rest they didn't take; they only took what Sichon took, and that's the idea where these psukma are important to mention, because it also would wonder how the Jewish people take them. It's because of those kavtarim who took it from the Avim, from Sichon who took it from Ammon and Moav, and that the Jewish people, although they weren't able to take from the Philistines or from the Ammon and Moav or from the Bnei Esav, but what was taken from others, which they took from them, they were allowed to take. So too, there's another seemingly unnecessary pasuk in Devarim. The pasuk said, Tzidainim, which is the name of a people, Yikru leChermon, they named Har Chermon Syrian. They called it Syrian. Now, and the pasuk continues, the Amori yikru leSnir, and the Amoris, they called Har Chermon Snir. So the question is, what do we need this pasuk? What do we care that this mountain that was between the boundary of these two different people that they called the different names? So it's time to learn the Bryce that actually Snir v'Syrian, these two names that they were calling Har Chermon, Mehari Eretz Yisrael, were from the mountains of Eretz Yisrael. And the Chermon was near the Tzidainim and on the boundary of the Amor. And they both built large cities on that mountain, and they called the mountain, one called it Syrian and one called it Snir, which were really the names of mountains in Eretz Yisrael. So that's an important lesson. Melamed shekol echad ve'echad me'umes ha'olam. This comes to teach that every one of the nations of the world, halach ubanu lekrachka la'atman, built a very large town for himself, ve'heleloi ashem hari Eretz Yisrael, and named that town based on the name of a mountain in Eretz Yisrael. That comes to teach you, Shafila Hari Eretz Yisrael, that even the mountainous regions of Eretz Yisrael, Chaviven al Umas Ha'olam, were so dear to the nations of the world that they went and built a town and named it after that mountain. That's why this pasuk is important. Kayetzabai, one last example he gives, the pasuk in Bereishis, says that regarding Yosef, when he was the viceroy of Egypt, so one of the things he did was, Vesa'am Hever Eisei La'arm, that when they sold themselves finally as slaves, and they sold everything to get food from Yosef in the storehouses. So what Yosef did is that he made the people move to different cities. He moved them all around. So again, my nafkamina, what's the difference? What's it going to teach us? The Torah is a book for old times. What's the relevancy that Yosef went and made people move? Again, it's an important lesson of sensitivity. Delay likru, because he didn't want that the Egyptians should call la'achav to his brothers at a later point in time, galvasa, that they're exiles, the sons of exiles, and the free one exiled them too. So then they can't say that about the Jewish people, and that's an important lesson that the Torah is teaching us. So although there are psukim that, so to speak, look like they should be burned, to the contrary, gufei tarahen, every single word and every single idea has important, even basic lessons, obviously deeper metaphysical lessons, all there in every single last word and letter in the Torah.